So I think we should start then on our final agenda item for the CMAC meeting, the formal CMAC meeting, on management commentary, and I believe I'm passing over to Helena.
Yes, thank you. I hope everybody can hear me.
Very clear.
Brilliant,
Thank you.
thank you. So now we are moving on to agenda paper four on disclosure objectives. And the main purpose of today's discussion is to get your input on disclosure objectives for main areas of content. And we are looking to understand what information do you need and what assessments you are making using that information. So in this paper, we cover disclosure objectives for six areas of content and management commentary: business model, strategy, resources and relationships, external environment, risks, and performance position and progress. So given the timing and format of this session, I will not be pausing and asking for your comments on each individual disclosure objective. Instead, I will introduce our overall design for the disclosure objectives and then talk you through our main ideas for individual disclosure objectives. Then I will stop and ask for your input on all six disclosure objectives together. But before we talk about the disclosure objectives, maybe a couple of key reminders about the background to the project. So management commentary is designed to meet the information needs of existing and potential investors, lenders, and our creditors, and we normally refer to this group as our primary users. So the board is revising the management commentary to help entities prepare management commentaries that better meet the information needs of those primary users. And to do so, we need to understand what information investors and creditors need and why they need that information. It is also important for us to produce guidance that, on the one hand, is principle-based, but on the other hand, is specific enough so that it can be enforced and so that management commentaries can be assured. So, moving on to our ideas on the disclosure objective so far. On slide 13, we show that the main idea behind including explicit disclosure objectives is to help preparers meet the objective of management commentary as a whole. And earlier this month, the board tentatively decided that the objective of management commentary as a whole is to help primary users assess the entity's prospects for future cash flows and assess management stewardship. And management commentary does so by enhancing users' understanding of performance and position in the reporting period. That is, by helping users understand what has already affected the entity, and then by giving insight into the future, that is, what might affect the entity. So on slide four, we explain that we aim to design our individual disclosure objectives for each of main areas of content so that they support all those aspects of the objective of management commentary as a whole. So we want them to support primary users' assessments of prospects of cash flows and assessments of stewardship. And we also want those disclosure objectives to help users understand what has affected the entity and what might affect the entity in the future. So on slides 17 to 22, we summarize our initial ideas for individual disclosure objectives. And for each disclosure objective, we have suggested the main focus of the objective. And on the slides, you can see them in bold. And then we also suggested a more detailed breakdown of users' information needs under each of those disclosure objectives. And they are the sort of bullet points below the text in bold. So, for example, if we look at slide 17, the proposed focus of the disclosure objectives for business model is to help users understand how an entity creates, maintains, and destroys value. And here, perhaps just a quick reminder that in this project, we mean value in a very specific sense, that is, value for the entity and its investors that manifests itself in cash flows. So then we suggest that to understand how an entity creates, maintains, and destroys value, users would need to understand, first of all, the nature and scale of the entity's operations, then the features of the entity's business model that give the entity competitive advantage or contribute to the entity's unique value proposition, And then related to that, how resilient and adaptable the entity's business model is. We also think that the description of the entity's business model should provide context for understanding the information in other sections of management commentary, as well as in the related financial statements. So I'm not proposing to go through all disclosure objectives in detail, but perhaps I will just quickly summarize what they focus on. So the disclosure objective for strategy focuses on information to help users understand management's plans to develop and sustain the entity's ability to create value. The disclosure objective for resources and relationships focuses on information to help users understand what resources and relationships the entity's business model and strategy depend on. The disclosure objective for external environment focuses on information to help users understand the external environment in which the entity operates, and in particular on those features of that environment which affect the entity's ability to create value and implement strategy. Next, the disclosure objective for risks focuses on information to help users understand what might disrupt the direction in which the management plans to take the entity. And finally, the disclosure objective for performance, position, and progress focuses on information to help users understand the results of the entity's operation for the reporting period, and then to understand how well the management has implemented its strategy. So with that, I'd like to stop and ask for your comments on both questions 1 and 2. It is very important for us to hear whether you agree with the proposed main focus of the disclosure objectives, that is to those statements in bold for all 6 objectives. And we also welcome your observations on question 2, that is on those supporting bullets on the slides. We'd like to know whether you agree with our identified information needs, and if not, could you please explain what information do you need, why do you need that information, and how do you use it in your analysis and decision-making? So with that, could we please hear your comments?
Thank you. So so looking for those 2 main questions, the overall description, and then some comments on in terms of the detail. So yes. Can I ask again, then those who are on video, who would like to make a comment here? Florian, I have, thank you. Anyone else? And Philip? And then those who've dialed in.
Yes, Bertrand.
Bertrand, thank you. Joel.
Paul.
And Marietta.
Jeremy, please.
Okay, thank you. Let's start with Marietta.
So on the business model, you know, just kind of defining it, defining what we want to hear, I'm not sure I quite understand why you're sticking with the word value as opposed to really just, you know, making it very clear that, you know, strong language that the companies really need to tell us how to make money. I mean, I see that, you know, that is ultimately your definition and your purpose. But I just really wanted to caution that companies talk about value creation in a very liberal way. So they actually a lot of times feel that by, you know, by doing various PR stunts or whatever, or by giving stuff away for free, they're actually getting great exposure, and it's really endearing them to stakeholders, and it will somehow, in some magical way, help them to make a lot of money in the future. So I really would just like to see stronger language here about, okay, we really want to know how they make their money, where it's coming from. I think, you know, we should just always get, and it should be for each major activity and not just on the corporate entity level. And we should just really get a feel for what activities are bread and butter and which ones are icing on the cake, so that if an activity can no longer be carried out or they are no longer competitive in that field, we have a rough idea to what extent the overall investment thesis is impacted. In terms of slightly more specifics on the business model, I think we should actually get in a prominent place for each of the major activities, whether the business model is one-sided, two-sided, or multi-sided. So whether you're making, you know, your money off of one customer groups or let's say two, for example, you know, a newspaper that lives on both advertising and on, you know, the paying subscription clients. And also if there's any element of free giveaways or giveaways at cost, any sort of freemium model or cross-subsidization and how that works. And my final comment would be, I'm very nervous about, you know, all your wording around explaining ESG issues. And I would really recommend that you just rephrase that and scrap the word ESG from all of this. And I can see why it's hard to leave the concept of ESG out of the equation completely. But I don't think you actually need to come at it explicitly from ESG angle. You could just frame all of the requirements in such a way that all financially relevant ESG issues are covered implicitly. And I think they actually are. So, for example, if you give drugs away for free to underinsured patients, that should be part of your business model value creation explanation. Or if there are minimum wage requirements that affect you significantly, or if your shippers need to upgrade their oil cleaning devices and that cost will be passed on to you, that should all be discussed under resources. And my main concern is really that if you explicitly talk about ESG, it really opens the door to you becoming an overall standard setter for all narrative reporting, including ESG, which is really what some stakeholders are pushing for. And I think it's a very, very slippery slope to go down, particularly if there's any risk that there are not even separate boards for financial versus ESG, because your resources are obviously limited, and that won't actually change if you take on any direct or indirect ESG reporting commitments. And what we're really seeing in the capital markets is that ESG is extremely resource intensive and is often eclipsing financial reporting and analysis. The structure, at least in Western capital markets, are such that a company can get away with poor financials and poor financial disclosure and still attract some investors. But if they don't make the very high ESG bar, then investors are effectively barred from investing, no matter how good the company is. And I remember a discussion last year where, for example, you were struggling to find resources to look into cryptocurrencies. And I think that sort of thing is only going to get worse if you take on anything that smacks even remotely of ESG. And the second big risk related to ESG, and that's sort of my final comment, is that I think it will drag you into a very explosive political debate that is effectively about cultural standards and social agendas. And those are just actually differ across the world. And I think, you know, if there's any perception that any sort of like Western standards are being foisted on the rest of the world, I think it will reduce the acceptance of IFRS standards in those parts of the world where the bulk of future economic activity is going to take place. And I think at the moment you can always push back against any political interference by saying the numbers are the numbers and we need to give the best view of a company's operations and finances, irrespective of any ideological debates. And the fact that IFRS is used in something like 150 countries all over the world shows that everyone actually buys into that argument and sees the need for a common reporting language. But when companies report on things like diversity and social justice in general, cultural and ideological factors actually play a big role, and companies in some countries may just not want to discuss, you know, the gender pay gap and the number of women and gays on their boards in the way that some Western companies do. So I think if you effectively force them to address ESG issues in a certain manner, or if they even perceive you as doing that, even if, you know, the language that you're using is not that specific, but there are sort of disclosure practices that emerge that everybody feels that they need to adhere to, then they may just walk away from IFRS and just go back to local reporting standards, especially if they have carve-outs or have malt carve-outs anyway. And they might just feel that the divide is greater or no longer. It's really important to make sure that whatever you do, all of the reporting remains financials focused. And that's really why I would remove the word ESG, because I think it opens Pandora's box. Sorry, that was a bit long, but I just thought that was very important. Thank you.
I mean, just to clarify, I think we've been very clear in terms of what falls within the scope of this project from the start, in terms of, you know, and I'll use the acronym ESG because it's easy to use. So I think it's more environmental and social issues. But we will only expect management to comment on those where they are materially financially, have material financial impact potentially on the entity. I think many of the other concerns that you spoke about really are beyond the scope of this project, whether some of them get touched upon either within the agenda, forthcoming agenda consultation, or perhaps even the trustee strategic review. Some of them are more likely. I don't know if they will be or not, but I don't think we're really dealing with those bigger picture issues within the scope of this project, beyond certainly where those factors can have a material financial impact on the entity. I hope that gives you some clarity and some confidence in terms of our focus.
Clarity, yes. Confidence, no. I mean, I know where you're coming from, Nick, but I think that, you know, it will be interpreted in a different way. And basically, I mean, you know, whenever I've spoken to somebody from, like, you know, integrated reporting or whatever, they feel that everything interlinks with everything and that everything you do in the ESG space will ultimately be relevant to your financials. So I think this really sort of, like, opens a back door for, like, you know, the whole ESG debate to somehow come into the corporate financial reporting debate. And I just think it's very, very dangerous. I mean, okay, maybe I'm wrong, but I have a feeling, I mean, this is actually a bottomless pit. And, you know, if you give them the little finger here, they will take the whole hand and it will just come back to haunt you. But it's just my view.
Okay, let's move on then to Joel.
Hi. I agree with the first part of the comment on creating value being too broader a term, perhaps, and on the idea of being a bit more direct in terms of maybe shareholder value at least. And I think that could be one way to define things in a more direct way. And And I think I would make maybe a broad point as well in terms of the perhaps giving some guidance on the connection between all of those disclosure objectives, basically, because they in a way are all complementary. I think, for example, if you take the risk objective, I think one of the key things that we will want to see from companies is the sort of where can we be wrong here, basically? What can go wrong? So I think having some guidance in terms of on the complementary between all of those different objectives and how companies should, when naming their strategic objective, for example, also highlight the specific risks embedded in that, not as a completely different and separate entity. I think that would be very useful as well.
Thank you. Let's go to Florian, please.
Yeah, so let's get this out of the way. I concur with Marietta, scratch ESG immediately in all these documents. For different reasons than Marietta's, but I think people have very different understandings of what ESG is. And then you have the governance issue and the ESG in there anyways, which confuses everything. So, I mean, please scratch that immediately. But I think what you're trying to address, and obviously since we are a sustainable investor, you know, if you think of it as sort of the SASB type of materiality matrix, what we want to reflect here is to have a very broad understanding of financially material aspects of the business. So this isn't really about only, you know, how this runs through the accounts, but also human capital development strategies. Important topic for many companies, very financially material. And as an investor, I really want to know how companies manage that. Now you can put that under ESG as ES part, but to be honest, if I have a company which doesn't do that well, I really don't want to invest in them in the first place, right? So I think what you're trying to get at with the ESG topic, which to be honest, seems like an afterthought tacked on to each of your little topics, the way you phrase it at this point in time is really, you know, you want to have a broad understanding or a broad concept of all financially material concepts, aspects you have in the business, right? So this was my sustainable, and I'll, with that, I'll stop on the sustainability discussion. In sort of picking up on some of the stuff that Joe just mentioned, if I look at these topics, I think of them as building on top of each other. So let's quickly walk through them. So on the business model, what I actually liked in the old structure was the nature of the business and the operating environment, which was more an external view, right? Sort of it was, how do we understand the structure and the economics of the market? And this was also what Marietta was driving at, is we really want to understand the economics of the market, not some vague understanding of value creation, but really how do the economics work? One-sided, two-sided markets, whatever, right? Subscription, licenses, whatever, right? But we really want to understand the structure and the economics of the market. And then, and this is kind of also included in the business model as it is right now, how does the company position itself within that operating environment? Right, and this is why I like the former structure slightly better, because there was clear, this is first the external sort of overall view, and then came the discussion, how does the company position itself within that? Right. And that understanding would then actually lead to an understanding of a purpose of an emission of a company, which you have kind of subsumed currently in your strategy point, but which is really just the starting point of your corporate strategy, right? So the mission and purpose of the company is really the starting point of the strategy. And here, if we then come into strategy, then it becomes kind of important, how do they want to execute on that strategy and how do they measure that? And part of that comes then back to some of the key metrics we've discussed in the management disclosure earlier. So given the strategy, why are then the metrics they have chosen relevant to track their progress against the strategy execution, right? So I think there's a link to the management disclosure and then later to the last point, the performance position and progress part. So you got the operating environment, the economics, you got the position of the company, you got the mission, you got the strategy, and then you talk about, you know, how I'm going to use all the resources that I have at my disposal, how can I use them most efficiently, and then you go into the external environment. The external environment part here is really kind of thin, right? I think you need to flush that out a little bit more. This is really, you know, sort of as an example. So what is the regulations? What are my macroeconomic exposures? What's the type of environment I would do best in? And I think when you talk about external environment, you really have to put in a little bit more examples here. Even the examples you're having is, there aren't really any, to be honest. When we come to risks, when we think of risks, there are two dimensions to risks, right? One is whatever can happen, impactful or not, and or is it probable to happen or not? So the current pandemic that we're currently experiencing is very impactful, but doesn't happen very often, right? But if that happens, you know, you have a real problem, whereas other things which happen really often, but which will not impact. So I think you have to be cognizant of the differentiation, what is probable and what is impactful. And you need to think of risks along those two dimensions. And then lastly, along the performance position and progress, I think here is the clear link back to the management disclosures, right? I think here is the point, where the company needs to argue, why are the management disclosures, which we're using somewhere else, the relevant ones to figure out if we're on track on achieving our strategy, right? So I think I would prefer to have a really explicit comment or an explicit reference to the management disclosure, management measurements in here to saying, okay, we really, if you choose to use non-GAAP measures, please explain why you use them, and this would be the point where to do it. Thanks.
Thank you, that's great. Philip.
Sorry, just unmute myself again. I guess for me, the management commentary is really where I look to understand the business, and it's management's opportunity to explain how their business works and how they're managing it. And I think at the minute, a lot of the missing part of that is the financial link. So they're not linking to historical performance, they're not linking to future performance, they're not linking what they do to how it's going to affect the business going forward. A couple of comments that have come to me recently. I mean, Florey mentioned the risk of coronavirus. It's probably an exceptional circumstance. But one thing, for example, that is not there in a lot of company accounts is how their supply chain works. So you're looking for that information now because you've had this shock. You don't necessarily have the description of how the supply chain's working. And I think that should already be in the first, I don't know where it comes in, resources and relationships. So, you know, you're not necessarily discussing the fact that what happens if the world shuts down for coronavirus, but you are explaining how your business is working so that you have an understanding of that already and can make some assumptions from that. Regards to ESG point, I'm not sure how you ignore ESG in the current environment. You know, for example, an oil company who does not talk about carbon transition risk is not giving you particularly useful disclosures. And one question I had was actually, are you likely to mandate any particular disclosures in that area, such as TCFD, if that's likely to be included in the management commentary? Paper going forward. Again, the problem with environmental is you know, I think you do need to, well, ESG, you do need to focus on the company and what's important to the company. So for an oil company, for example, carbon transition is very important. We've got a lot of the oil companies at the minute give us a lot of blurb about what's happened to the oil price in the year. You can get that from anywhere. What you want is how that change in the oil price has affected the oil company, what their hedging strategy is, what their transition strategy is going forward, what you know how they're going to deal with that going forward. The energy companies the same, how they're moving towards renewables away from oil, what the effect of that is on their business going forward. So I don't know, for some companies, I don't see how you can avoid the ESG aspects. But I kind of take Marietta's point that it's potentially a bottomless pit. I think, but I do think you've got to focus on, there are going to be risks which are very relevant to companies, which are ESG risks, which have to be covered.
Thanks, Philip. Can we go to Bertram next?
Yes, thank you. I have three main questions or comments on this matter. The first one relates to the way we handle this management commentary. Do you plan to suggest one chapter by a theme, or how it will be handled within the management commentary and the annual report? The second one is about the consistency with market authority and local regulation. How do you handle also this subject? And the last one is about risk and opportunity. So you have a dedicated chapter about risk. With regard to opportunities, do you consider that they are included in either in the business model, the strategy, or the resource and the relationship? This is my main questions. Hello.
Hi. So, Julia, do you want to respond to those questions, or do you want to come back to those?
I could respond to the third question. I suppose I couldn't fully follow the first and the second question. On the third question, at the moment, we are intending to capture opportunities, at least in our guidance, under the discussion of strategy. And what I would like to highlight, that where we include this discussion in our guidance does not mean that this is where the company would need to discuss opportunities. But at least in our guidance at the moment, we think that opportunities should be covered in the discussion of strategy. I couldn't really understand the first and the second question.
I think the second question was about the interaction between the requirements of the practice statement and jurisdictional requirements that exist already.
So our intention for the practice statement is to be written in a way that it would be compatible with local requirements and regulations. And this is our ambition. This is a fine balance here for us to strike. So on one hand, we want it to be principle-based, but on the other hand, we still want it to be specific enough so it can be rigorously applied and so it can be enforced. But this is what we're aiming for at the moment.
Thanks, Julia. And Bertram, sorry, just clarify the first question, please.
Yes, the first question was related to the organization of the management commentary. So there are 6 or 7 chapters that you suggest. Do you plan to suggest 6 or 7 chapters, or do you, or the issuer will have the capability to organize the management commentary in its own way?
Julia, do you want to respond?
As I already noted, so basically we do not expect the companies to organize their management commentary using the same structure as we organize our guidance. But that said, we do realize that some companies might actually choose to follow the structure of the practice statement in organizing their own reports if they find it easier. But it would not be required. Does it answer your questions?
Yes, clearly. Thank you.
Bertram, any other further comments or observations? No, let's go to Jeremy then, if we could, please.
Jeremy here. Obviously, it's a very big topic, this. The one thought I had is, as a test, a really good management commentary for me is one where I could read it and then imagine in broad outline what the financial statements would look like. That would be the kind of pass the test of, that's the objective for me, I think, in the management commentary. At the moment, of course, the management commentary tends to cherry pick the positives rather than the negatives, the revenue and opportunities and the assets rather than the expenses and the liabilities. So coherence between the two parts of the accounts. In terms of the one of the objectives was to forecast cash flows. I suppose the most general objective is to value the, from my perspective, to value the equity, and the forecasting of the cash flow, just to be clear, is also an assessment of the discount rate. So it's sufficient information to forecast the cash flows and the risks of those cash flows. Another point I think you made already very well, as much as possible to link comments to do with resources to parts of the financial statement, such as intangible assets and plant. On the strategy point, I think what was missing to me was capital allocation comments and capital structure. It's always helpful for a company to outline their priorities of where they're going to spend their free cash flow. In terms of describing the business, I think it's too much to expect everything to be management commentary, but from a perspective of a layperson or a member of the public that's informed reading this, I think they should at least at a high level understand the value proposition the company is delivering to their customers. If possible, the unit economics and typical, again, high level, the contractual terms. I like the comments people made in terms of organization between external and internal. In terms of external, I just think of the old Porter's five forces to give me a sense of what's happening in the environment at a high level. And in terms of internal, if there could be some, this links to the supply chain comment, I think of those three different flows. The flow of materials for industrial companies, at least, again, a high level, what you buy in and the processing, where do you sell it to? The flow of information, which applies to any company, and again, a high level flow of cash as well. So these are all the things that would be very helpful for me so that I could, again, pick up a company I don't know, read the management commentary, and have a pretty good guess as to how the financial statements may look, and even have a good guess at some forecasts. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Jeremy. Paul, could I go to you next, please?
So I'll come on to what I was going to say, but just before I forget, I'd strongly endorse Jeremy's comment on including capital allocation into strategy explicitly. I think that would be extremely helpful. It's probably implicit in there, but I think making it explicit is useful. And similarly, Philip's comment about specifically referencing supply chain, really, really important. I suspect it's implicit in the resources and relationships section, but making it explicit would be useful. So the points I was going to make were on two of the sets of objectives, business model and risks. But just before I get into those specifics, I think the structure that you're using is a good one, and particularly the language around providing information to users to help them understand is the right way to frame this. That puts the burden on the preparers to think about what information is needed to help investors understand what's going on, understand what the opportunity is, and that must be the right frame to use. So on the specifics, on business model, I'm really uncomfortable with the use of the term destroying value in that objective. Clearly, not every company all the time creates or maintains value. Quite often, they do destroy value. But I'm not sure that any business model is ever intended to destroy value, at least in the long term. So I think inviting a discussion of a business model destroying value is just a bit confusing. So I would have thought that to capture the fact that sometimes there may be value destruction, at least in the short term, talking about how an entity seeks to create or maintain value would be better language to use, both in the top level objective and in the first of those bullet points. And then the second point was on risks, and I've got two points here. One is, I think the language of disrupting the direction in which the management plans to take the entity is a bit strange. And it's not terribly consistent with some of the language that you've used elsewhere. Elsewhere, you've talked about, for example, under resources and relationships, you've talked about the operation of the entity's business model and the implementation of its strategy. And I would have thought that's a better set of words to use for the objectives for risks. So disrupt the business model or the strategy, rather than this direction in which the management plans to take. And then the other point on risks is I think you need to emphasize that investors need insight and information on long-term risks as well as short-term risks. Now, again, one hopes that that's implicit here, but one suspects that unless it's made explicit, companies might ignore some of those long-term risks that actually are the most likely to knock over their business models and damage the strategic direction. So I think talking about seeking disclosure about long-term risk as well as the short-term is probably necessary.
Thanks, Paul. Anthony, I think you wanted to come in.
I did. I don't want to add too much, but I strongly agree with Marietta's original comments. Every time here in Canada that the question comes up about ESG, there's mixed emotions on many levels, and then it gets into people's political bias, their investment bias, and it goes down a bunch of different rabbit holes. And we're, I think we're going out on a number of limbs, which I think we need to, related to the non-GAAP stuff. If we just don't include it here in wording in our document, and we just leave it more open, then people can, because that's the intent, for people to discuss the key items that are important for their goals, for their strategy, et cetera. If ESG is their strategy, then they can talk about it. If something else is part of their strategy, then they can talk about it. I think if you just mention ESG, then someone could mention things like, what about board composition? What about all this other type of thing? I think it's better to be more vague than to actually go down that hole. There's a number of organizations trying to come up with how ESG should be measured, and I don't know if any work's been done between the, I think there's two or three competing more significant organizations that have come up with ESG ratings. We took a bit of time to see how each of them is doing it, and there's no consistency. So that's a whole can of worms. Anyway, that would be my views. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. Any further comments from CMAC members on these issues? Yes, thank you. Coy, over to you. And then Philip. Coy first.
Thank you. I would like to propose adding two informations. One is about governance information. I think that governance information among ESG is in particular directly tied to corporate performance. I think that governance-related information would tie together the strategies and the business model exposed by the management and the corporate performance and financial condition that result from their implementation, helping users to reach a deep understanding of financial information. The other one is about shareholders' return, such as dividend policy and buyback information, may be welcome. That's all.
Thank you, Coy. Philip.
It's just a little while ago now, but I was just wanted to sort of thank Jeremy for his comment. I think you do know when you read a good management commentary, and it's very difficult to articulate in a standard, I think, and I think you've done a great job. But I think you do know when you've read a good one, and it tells you what you want to know about the business. You also know when you've read a bad one, and you've read, pages and pages, and you get to the end of it and you think, what the hell does this business do? I think you're making pretty good steps with that.
Thank you, Philip. Can I ask the staff, is there anything further they would like to ask?
Nick, can I make a very quick comment as well again?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Just wanted to add on the ESG point that I think was said in the very beginning, right? That, just the amount of commentary that has generated already shows how it is really a kind of warm, and I kind of agree with that. But I also take the point that was made that nowadays you cannot ignore ESG. It's pretty much impossible to do so. So perhaps one suggestion would be to try to find ways in which you can make that more directly linked to results, and perhaps be a bit less broad. The cultural points that were raised, I think, make a lot of sense as well. So one thing that in very general terms, people tend to talk about ESG, so what 99% mean generally is just the E, it's just environmental. The S and the G are afterthoughts, after the environmental part. So perhaps one way would be to talk more directly about environmental issues rather than ESG as a catchphrase, and to link that to results, maybe environmental issues that affect shareholder value or that have a direct impact in the performance of the business, something along those lines that connects it to the performance of the business.
I think that's a good way to approach it. And it may also, I mean, there was another CMEC, another member mentioned earlier about, you know, the value of the workforce. And there it's probably being more explicit that some of those social indicators could be appropriate to help monitor as a KPI around a workforce where people are particularly important. So I think it's a good point that we probably need some more precision in terms, rather than using ESG as shorthand for covering all of those issues. So I think that's helpful. Okay, so just going back to the staff, whether there are any further issues or questions that you would like to raise, or have you got enough information from CMEC members today?
So I would say that it's really, really helpful to hear your suggestions and to understand better how you think about things. So there is definitely a lot of feedback for us to think through. I suppose one question I have on my mind listening to this discussion, and there might be not an easy answer, but I think at the end of the day, one of the key messages I'm taking away is around connectivity, that you need all that information about risks, about resources, about supply chain, about business model, how it fits into the economy. So you need all of that to understand the company. But I guess from our perspective, we must find a good way to break that into individual components so we could help companies produce good management commentaries. One of those where you look at them and, that's a good management commentary. So I suppose two things I wondered if anyone has any suggestions. So a couple of people mentioned that when you pick up a management commentary, you know whether you've read a good one or a bad one. So I would be curious, what is it that makes it a good one or a bad one? And main messages. And my second question would be, again, appreciating how all that information is interconnected, I would be curious if you could highlight any particular specific assessments or evaluations that you make based on information and management commentary. So for example, are you trying to assess how competitive the business model is? For example, are you trying to assess how achievable the strategy is? So any sort of a level down main questions that you have for a company when you read through management commentary, understanding that would be very helpful for us. Does my question make sense, Nick?
Yes, I know it does. So, I think what I'd say is that if anyone has any immediate observations on that, those would be welcome. But equally, to follow up later, if people want to give it a little bit more thought, the team's open. Philip has kindly offered that he will think about what he's, some examples of what he's found helpful and what he hasn't, which is very welcome. Thank you. I don't know if there are any other CMAP members who have an immediate response to Yulia's questions. If not, please do feel free to get in contact, and we're very happy to set up separate meetings on a one-to-one basis to take this forward in more detail. We think it's clearly a very important project for us, and complementary to the work which we do on financial reporting or the financial statements. Good.
Jeremy, can I make one short comment, please?
Yeah, please do, Jeremy.
Just what I'm reading through, one test would be if the business is described in glowing terms that it has a superior advantage relative to its competition, and yet I look in the financial statements and the return on capital is very modest, that would be one example where it doesn't pass the test of a good management commentary. So, again, it's a description, gives me an indication as to what the ratios may look like, and then I think that's a tick for me.
Okay. Thank you, Jeremy, and thank you to the team for taking us through that paper. And this brings us to the end of our formal CMAC proceedings. And I just want to, on behalf of the staff and the board, thank all CMAC members today, both new and old members, for some fantastic contributions under what are unusual circumstances. We will close the formal session now, but could I ask all CMAP members to remain connected, and we'll carry on with some administrative business in a moment. So, but thank you.